loved all that action on Saturday night after winners. Colo, good morning.
I was down the end of the line when you were asking Whitey who sang the 87 Grand Final. I'm like, it's Daryl Summers, it's Daryl Summers. it's not even the best national anthem of the Grand Final season in 87, of course. Ricky May sang the national anthem in the SENFL Grand Final and botched it like you've never seen it
yes.
before. So much so that at the end of the anthem, you can hear in the background one of the commentators saying, was he drunk? he misses about four different lines.
That is great footage. That, and of course, Colo, Ricky May was a regular on Saturday, but was he was also a referee on It's a Knockout.
He was too.
My first memories of watching Hey Hey Saturday pretty much all revolve around Ricky May. So we come full circle there, one.
It's a magnificent thing. It's a magnificent thing. God love you too. Now tell me, we were watching with great interest yesterday, Colo, of the one-day series between Ireland and England. We know that the series was wrapped up before yesterday's game, but we were barracking hard for Ireland, who were chasing 327 or whatever they were to get the win, and they bloody did it, you know.
They did. It was awesome to be there for it. I reckon I was one of about 200 people at the ground there at Southampton in the biosecure bubble, and I've got to say, I mean, sometimes press boxes, as Whitey would know, I mean, sometimes they verge on unprofessional, and this was most unprofessional. We were cheering every last run. the cricketing community, especially, I guess, the journalistic fraternity, we're huge fans of Ireland. They've been treated so poorly by the ICC in recent years, not so much in respect to test status, but in terms of the World Cup being reduced from 14 to 10 teams, which meant they weren't really able to make the last World Cup after having so much success in the previous three iterations of the tournament. So, we're all fans of Ireland, and it was just an amazing result. And the fact that it was Paul Sterling making 142. He was the one that got him off to the flying start at Bangalore in 2011 when they knocked off England and chased down 327. So there's a nice little bit of continuity there.
Yeah, well, he was magnificent with his 142. And the skipper, Andy Balburnie, rocked up with 113 as well, which really put the palms on the heels. Was there many changes from game two to game three from an England perspective? Because they'd wrapped the series up?
No, it wasn't like that. Reece Topley didn't play. He did a slight groin strain at Nurse. He wasn't able to play the third one day international. So as a consequence, Tom Curran came back into the side. But I think it was less to do with England and more to do with the fact that Ireland were bang up for this. So this is the beauty of the new one-day World Cup Super League. It wasn't a dead rubber, the third game, because the 13 teams playing in that, and it just started this week. So long story short is that between World Cup cycles, the 13 teams will play against each other, much as it is the World Test Championship, and they narrow 13 to 7, and that becomes your automatic qualifiers for the next World Cup. And then the next three teams play off in a repercharge type thing for the final three spots against the three teams who qualify in the level below. So, in other words, it gives Ireland something, you know, quite obvious to play for. And it's great for the development of these teams. So the Netherlands are in that top 13 as well. So for their part, they'll be hosting England in 3 one-day internationals in May next year. That'll be quite a fun week away, actually, in Amsterdam. I'll be there for that. So, it's a new way of interpreting. I mean, we've all watched any number of one-day series, but played over 5 or 7 games, and they drag on. They're lacking in the context, and like they're a bit of a non-event. You forget them; they're wallpaper. Whereas this actually had relevance, even though the series was lost. There were World Cup Super League points to be won, and as far as the broader point with Ireland and pride and beating England, I mean, it means a lot to them. Make no mistake.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one, Colo, because they have a one-day game in England one day, and then the next day they've got a test match. So obviously England had a very, very different team for red ball cricket compared to white ball cricket. Now, under normal circumstances, maybe England would have 4 or 5 from their test team that were playing the one-day team. So they were clearly disadvantaged. But did that sort of... Were they worried about that? Or is it kind of like under these circumstances of coronavirus, it is what it is?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. And to be fair, England rarely play their best one-day team on the and so do Australia, for that matter. I mean, there's always some sort of rotation or resting going on in bilateral series. So, yeah, it was a factor. They wouldn't have had 4 or 5 players missing had they been playing this series when it was originally scheduled, which actually was for September, pre-coronavirus. But yeah, you're spot on with respect to that. I think that the way of thinking about this is that it's not the first time it's happened. You might recall a few years ago, Whitey, that the Australian test team played in India the day after the T20 side played in Hobart. I mean, so it's not completely precedent for teams to play one after another. I mean, you want to go back a century or so. I mean, two England test teams played on the same day. I mean, it's not completely outside the realms that this will be a method into the future, especially in the short term. So, I mean, we don't know how long we'll need to play in biosecure conditions in the UK, but, I mean, set up as it is, only really two venues can be used, Manchester and Southampton, so they might have to get creative like this in order to keep the players in their respective bubbles. I mean, hopefully there's a vaccine and things get back to normal by next summer, but if they don't, this might be something we see again.
Your man, Kevin, tell us a little bit about him, because... He's been a hero of Ireland cricket for a long time. I talked to you sort of offline yesterday. He hits the winning runs, and you'd swear to God he's just knocked the first run around the corner for a single in the third over. But he's a big name in Ireland cricket.
He's just the best. I mean, Kevin O'Brien was the man who made the quickest World Cup century in that win against England in 2011. He made his 100 in 50 balls and went on to make the defining 113. Remember, they were chasing 327 that sort of fateful night way back in March 2011. But they were 5 for 100 when O'Brien put the foot down. They were completely gone, and then it was a pretty good England team that went into that 2011 World Cup, and he eliminated them basically from the competition. So there's that. But then there's the first test match which Ireland played against Pakistan in Dublin in 2018, which I had the privilege of being at as well. I mean, when they were following on in the second dig, who was it? Kevin O'Brien. You know, when they were 5 for 50-odd in the first innings, it was Kevin O'Brien again. He was man of the match in a losing effort and gave them something to bowl to after following on. And look, they nearly rolled Pakistan in that test match. It's easy to forget that how close they went after following on. Yeah. So he was there. I mean, it's the fact that he has played for five counties. You know, like, he's done it all. He's the classic journeyman, and he's the one guy who... in the Ireland setup, they're a team in transition, the golden generation who gave them so many amazing memories from 2006, qualifying for the 07 World Cup, knocking off Pakistan on St Patrick's Day in 2007 at Sabina Park, which got them into the second round of that competition from absolutely nowhere. The aforementioned win in 2011, the World Cup in 2015. Remember, they beat the West Indies in that competition. They came, you know, within one victory of making it through to the quarterfinals and knocking out Pakistan. He's been integral to all of that, and they still need him there, despite the fact that he's age 36. He kind of reminds me of almost the captain coach. He's not the captain, and he's not the coach, but he's kind of a bit of both at the moment, because he's the senior elder statesman. So he's like a playing assistant coach or something like that. And he'll probably end up being an international coach or a county coach when this is all over. But it was so fitting that when they needed 65 or 50 balls, when the wicket started falling at the end, when the two centurions fell, it was O'Brien that came in with the young man, Harry Tector, who's 20 years of age, playing his third one-day international. And O'Brien, at age 36, just controlled the situation, struck the boundaries he needed to, and got there with a ball to spare. It was perfectly fitting. And talking to him and interviewing him the day before, he all but foreshadowed this. He said to me, he hates England. He wants to beat them again. It might be the last time he plays against England, and sort of watch out for one more big performance. So, he's mindful of, his footprint on the game as well.
It was a magnificent performance by Ireland, defeating them, chasing down 3-2-8 to win yesterday in the one day, the third of the one days, which was great. And England had to back up again the next day or last night, because the test series against Pakistan started at Manchester. You said the other venue was at Manchester. So that's where this one is. Pakistan won the toss and decided to bat, Colo. But has Abid Ali, has he worked out what happened yet with that ball from Archer? Because he had less idea than me, I reckon, facing Archer last night.
Love the fact that from time to time you hear that Jofra Archer apparently is on a red ball bowler, and then he sets a batsman up with a classic red ball dismissal, pushed him back on the back foot, short ball, then the off cutter off the seam, actually work. It was classic test match bowling. So good to see Archer in the action early. Wokes as well. But to be fair, Pakistan made a bold decision this morning. Looking at those pictures from Manchester at the toss, it was dark. The lights were on. The pitch was fresh. I mean, especially with Shaheen Afridi, Nassim Shah and Mohammad Abbas as your seam attack, there would have been a temptation from Azhar Ali to have bowled first, I think. But we saw Jason Holder make a similar mistake in Manchester in the last 2 weeks, actually. He bowled first in both the second and third test match that backfired. But this probably was the most compelling time to bowl. He backed himself in. There are a couple of wickets in the first session, but Babar Azam joined Shah Massoud, an unbeaten 96 either side of the rain. They're going only losing two wickets on day one. And they're really well placed with Barber on 69 and batting like a millionaire. Absolutely brilliant he was this afternoon. So good on them for backing themselves. And I think they've got a serious series there.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I just, before we let you go, Colo, just the whole landscape in English cricket, because not only are you covering international cricket, you cover the county scene as well, and we're seeing a smattering of people able to go and watch games now. And again, even just around London, what's it like, you know, living in a coronavirus time in London at the moment?
Got some really bad news on Friday that they're not going to ease restrictions enough to allow crowds to county cricket, which is a real blow. So there was going to be 2,000 people at the Oval and at Edgbaston last week, but they had to, as a trial, but they had to wind that back because of the additional outbreaks in the last couple of weeks. And Manchester, where the Test match is being played right now, has been locked down again effectively. So I mean, there's this dissonance between, I guess, the idea that we've got a Test match going on in the bubble at Old Trafford, but the city more broadly is in a fair bit of trouble. So, yeah, I think, to be honest with you, Whitey, because we've been living with it since March, and remember, I mean, I don't downplay what's going on in Victoria, not for a heartbeat, but, I mean, massive numbers of hundreds and hundreds of people dying every single day for a long period of time was just part of everyday life over here for 3 months. So it's a different kind of experience now coming out of it, because I suppose we've been conditioned to it being more hardcore earlier on in the process. So the very idea that we're even talking about crowds going back to cricket, well, that's a luxury, and one we probably won't enjoy this season based on the most recent outbreaks. But, yeah, the county season, they've been able to somehow get it off the ground, each team playing 5 first-class games through August, a few T20s as well. I'll be doing the Middlesex to Surrey stuff over the next couple of weeks in addition to the international games as well, and I'm just sort of glad that the rhythms of the summer have arrived, albeit belatedly, and at least there's some cricket to, I mean, yeah, without being too crude about it, but sort of take our minds off the broader reality of the UK at the moment.
Well, it's not a bad thing, just take your mind, because it's a fairly constant theme from day-to-day life, as you'd imagine, Colo, your place and our place as well. So, well, it's nice to have a distraction of sport and something we can get our teeth into from a contest perspective. But it's always great to chat to you. Did you ever get on the Early Bird Show, Colo? Ever a home viewer on the remote control car game?
I'm a little bit too young for that. I mean, the best thing I was able to achieve in terms of call-in shows was the night before Australia beat Uruguay in 2005. I featured on Hot Dog Late Night Games. I mean, I wish I was making that up, but I mean, you couldn't. I suppose that's my lot in life.
Well, I must admit, I was tempted to call many times on a hot dog show just to say good day, give myself a chance. Hot dog's up late. Oh, God love him. God love him. Colo, you're a champ. We love chatting to you always. Good luck with the cricket, and we'll look forward to chatting to you soon.
Go well, boys. Talk soon. Cheers.